prepare yourself for the terror. The prison of madness, where few enter and none return.
Welcome to Unsung Horrors. With Lance. And Erica.
Leave all your sanity behind. It can't help you now.
Welcome to another episode of Unsung Horrors, the podcast where we discuss underseen horror movies, specifically those that have fewer than 1,000 views on Letterboxd. I'm Erica.
I'm Lance.
And before we get into this week's episode, just a quick update on some stuff watched at Alamo Drafthouse recently, part of our Drafthouse segment, if we'll call it that. So Godzilla had their birthday recently, and I went to a double feature of Revenge of Godzilla and Godzilla versus Biollante. And that was really fun. I'd never seen Biollante before. Nice. Revenge was a rewatch, but that was still fun as well.
Yeah, I've never seen any of those. I need to.
And then the other one, though, that I did want to point folks to, if you haven't seen yet, last week's Weird Wednesday was Top of the Heap, which is, I think it gets confused or mistakenly labeled as blaxploitation. And that's because of, you know, who wrote and produced and directed and starred in it. But
Christopher St. John.
Christopher St. John. And it has elements of that, but ultimately, like, it's just pure anger and it's really fucking good.
Yeah, 100%. I did select that as a blaxploitation pick years ago for Jeansploitation. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like you said, it's so much more than that.
Yeah. I believe it's got a Blu-ray out there. At least a couple years ago, it finally got one, but it is.
It does.
Okay. It's on Tubi right now, though, if you want to check it out.
Nice.
All right. Getting into our movie for this episode, we're going to be talking about a 90s desert slasher.
Yes.
Called Mirage from 1990.
An innocent weekend in the sun.
Look, I found that in the windshield.
Chip, you better not be trying to scare me.
Becomes a nightmare of unspeakable terror.
You are all going to die?
No!
Stalked by the symbol of unrelenting evil, they'll do anything to survive.
Come on, joke's a joke, but this is kind of crazy, don't you think?
Too terrifying to be real. Too deadly to be anything else. Mirage.
As of this recording, it has 198 views on Letterboxd and is available to watch on YouTube. There are, I think, two uploads of it on YouTube. The one that has more views, I think like 70,000 something, that's the one that you want, because the other one with fewer views, the audio goes out at some point. So
did you watch that one first and then the audio went out? You're like,
yeah.
Fuck.
So Mirage, very independent film in every sense, and kind of like almost a family film, because if you watch it and see the names in the credits, 90% of them are going to have the last name Crane.
It's a family affair. Yeah. I did notice that right away.
Yeah.
All the Cranes.
All right. So Bill Crane, we'll start with him, is the co-writer, producer, director, and he also did the sound design and the score for the movie as well. Now, I said Bill Crane. Some of you might be thinking Blackula, but no. And the Letterboxd bio even says that. It says writer, director, and producer of educational shorts and features, not the William Crane who directed Blackula. So keep that in mind. But yeah, he's only got 8 total credits. Most of them are short films. He did have one other film starring David Carradine that looked not good and I didn't want to watch it, so I didn't. But, you know, it's not as if I could watch just one of his other films to get a sense of his direction. Right. You know, I feel like you need to watch at least a few of some ones to get a sense of that. And I don't think his action movie with David Carradine would grant me that. So I opted not to watch it. Was it a 90s action? Oh, yeah.
Nice.
And from what I'm assuming, this is one of his brothers, the editor, Brian Crane. He also did sound design and music editing on this. And then also assuming another brother, I don't know, maybe there's a dad in there. I mean, maybe it was, you never know.
Yeah.
But I couldn't find out. There's no information out there on this movie. And it's hard to find information on Bill Crane that's not William Crane, director of Blackula. So that made it a little tough. But Michael Crane, he was the cinematographer and another producer on this. Another co-writer on this, not a Crane, is Chuck Hughes. He also wrote Ed and His Dead Mother, which is not my favorite subgenre horror comedy, but Ed and His Dead Mother from 1993, starring Steve Buscemi. I feel like Ned Beatty's in it too, and a few other people, but it's fun.
Check it out.
Yeah. I guess the sort of big name on this, though, is the guy who did the special effects.
Yes.
And it's on credited on this film as R. Christopher Biggs, but he also mostly goes by Chris Biggs for most of his credits. So lots of familiar titles for horror fans. He did Galaxy of Terror, Scalps, Terror Vision, Mausoleum, Silent Night, Deadly Night 2, From a Whisper to a Scream, Critters 2, Nightmare on Elm Street 4 and 5, Super Mario Brothers, Demolition Man. And then he also got into some digital effects later in his career, like after the 90s, and did stuff like Donnie Darko. He was also credited on some TV shows.
Yeah, he was. My Two Dads, which everybody watched, right?
Right.
Erie, Indiana, and Martin Lawrence's Martin. Yeah, his special effects, like makeup department credits, have, you know, Teen Wolf was on there, Critters 2,
yeah.
Or you say Critters 2, Ghoulies. I mean, this guy does have an awesome resume.
Yeah. And I'm not going to be mean to this movie, but honestly, if they didn't have this guy doing the effects, there wouldn't be much to talk about with this. Well, there's stuff to talk about, but
yeah,
that's the highlight of this film, I think.
Yeah, they're done very well. It definitely elevates the enjoyment.
Yeah. So I did mention that the writer-director, Bill Crane, also composed the music for this. But there is also a soundtrack.
Yeah.
Which, again, it's frustrating when you get movies like this and you can't find that much information about it. Because all of the bands on this soundtrack are from SST Records, which was, that was my shit in high school. That was like Black Flag, Descendants. Like, I was like, hell yeah. And those aren't on this. Sorry, don't get excited. There's no Black
right.
Flag. They're not going to rise above in the desert. Sorry. But yeah, it's got Minutemen, Dinosaur Jr., a few other SST bands. But I could not find anything to save my life.
Yeah.
So.
And the song selection, while good, and a lot of them I didn't recognize, they're just placed at the most odd moments.
Very
Usually
much.
It's like deep conversations while they're talking about relationships.
Yeah.
And so it's just kind of like almost an afterthought. Like, yeah, I'm wondering if they did have the rights to these or just like, we need something extra.
Yeah.
Hey, let's put this song in.
If I had to guess, I would say that they didn't, because there's that one scene where Greg is teaching Chris to shoot the bow and arrow, and there's a song going on, but they're talking and I'm like, don't have both. Like, stop it.
Well, right after that, there's Greg's brother, Kyle's talking to Chris about like still being in love with her.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some sort of like just jamming song in the background.
Like, that does not go there.
It's fine.
So I guess probably a good reason that I can't find very much information on this is because it never received a video release in the United States. It got a video release in the UK, though.
Okay.
So the VHS rip that you're watching is from a UK VHS.
And it does freeze at the end. If you wanted to watch all the credits, you're not going to get through it on this YouTube version.
Yeah. The cast list is pretty much just as short, though. And a lot of them don't have very many credits. There's a couple exceptions, though. So They're kind of in couples. So we'll start with Jennifer McAllister as Chris. She is our main final girl. She's the pictured girl on the poster with the tube top and ripped jeans. Mm-hmm. Not tube top, half crop top. I don't know my skimpy clothing terms. Sorry, folks. She's mostly done TV. Mirage was actually her last acting credit. I don't know if something bad happened and she was like, I'm out after that. Mm-hmm. Kenny Johnson is her boyfriend. This is his second acting credit in his career. He's done mostly TV as well. I actually recognized him before I looked him up, but I didn't know from where until I looked him up. And he was Detective Curtis Lemansky on The Shield. And I fucking love The Shield.
Nice.
It's a good show. Then we have Kyle and Bambi. And we'll come back to Bambi. Bambi actually has the most credits out of anybody, surprisingly. Kyle is played by Todd Caldicott, a.k.a. Todd Schaefer, a.k.a. Todd Schaffer. He's got a couple movies like Friday the 13th, Jason Takes Manhattan, and Fear, the Mark Wahlberg
one. Oh, yeah. I love that movie.
Do you? Oh, my God. Good. It's so bad.
I'm telling everybody who thinks it's bad, watch it again. That's all I'm saying.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Isn't William Peterson the dad in that?
Yes, I think he is.
Manhunter guy. Isn't he the dad?
I think, he's a dad.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. I don't want to watch a movie about psycho boyfriend.
I mean, it's Mark Wahlberg we could all agree, he's not a very good actor at all.
Correct.
But him as a, like a horny, murderous teen.
Yeah.
It just fits. It's like him. I feel like he just nails it and he's a terrible actor in it, but it works.
But it works in this context.
It works in this.
Okay. All right. I'll.
Jason Takes Manhattan too. That's a good one to watch. That's fun. We watched that at a Terror Tuesday. That was a blast.
That would be fun at a Terror Tuesday, but I can't imagine any other context for being like, I'm going to pop in Jason Takes Manhattan.
Yeah, maybe if you do some sort of like boat marathon or something, that'd be a good one to throw on.
That's true.
Yeah.
I could get down with that. All right. So Todd Caldicott, a.k.a. Todd Schaefer or Schaffer as Kyle. Friday the 13th, Jason Takes Manhattan.
Fear.
All right. So Laura Albert is Bambi. She has 160 plus credits for stunt work, not acting. But she does have some notable acting credits. She plays Mrs. Van Houten in Dr. Caligari from 1989, which I didn't recognize her because, it was only a year later, but completely different looks. So hard to recognize her. She was in the Patrick Swayze classic Roadhouse.
Nice.
And I know this is one of your favorites, Lance. Stone Cold.
Yeah. Brian Bosworth.
Oh, yeah.
Lanson. Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
That's a really good one. So she's actually got, her IMDb list is longer than anybody else involved with this movie. So good for you, Laura Albert. All right. Then the next two, we've got Trip and Mary, played by Kevin Masterson and Nicole Anton, and they have no other credits.
Love Trip. He is such a good character.
He's all about the astral plane, baby.
He is. His third eye. so many great characters, again, just like we talked about in Mad Men.
Yeah.
The characters in there are
stupid.
Stupidly developed well. you remember them.
Yes. All right. So then the last one is the unnamed villain. He's just credited as villain in the film. So he's credited on Letterboxd and in the credits in the film as BG Steers. Now, I am 90% sure that this is Burr Gore Steers, who was Bub in Intruder from 1989. He's got Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs credits, and he's the writer and director of Igby Goes Down and Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. So I found him on Instagram. I messaged him. He has not seen my message yet because it doesn't look like he's very active on there. So if he does get back to me, because I messaged him, I was like, hey, were you the villain in Mirage 1990? if he gets back to me, I'll update everyone.
What was his credit as in Pulp Fiction? I'm trying to figure out what he looks like. Because this guy, he does have a look. It's recognizable. Yeah. I did feel like I've seen him before somewhere.
Reservoir Dogs, he is background radio play voice.
Okay. That's totally him. That picture of him. That's the killer.
That's why I'm saying that's why I'm 90% sure.
Yeah. That's gotta be him.
Yeah. I think so.
Because he reminded me, like, as soon as he pops up and starts talking, I mean, we'll talk about him.
Oh, yeah.
But he's just this goofy dork, reminding me of like a young Topher Grace, like Eric Foreman trying to play a maniac.
Yeah.
Just very like, that's cool though.
Burst. But that's it for cast and crew. So we will get into our thoughts about the film, including about BG Steers or Burgor Steers, right after this promo from our network.
You're listening to the Prescribed Films Podcast Network, home to hundreds of hours of free podcast entertainment. The shows on this network all have a common goal: providing you with the best discussions about movies and other forms of entertainment media. The PFPN hopes to fill your earholes with audio joy. Visit our website with links to all the other amazing shows at www.thepfpn.com. Thanks for listening.
Before we get into talking too much about the movie itself, Lance, are you a camper?
I was, yeah, as a kid. I haven't, like, when I camp now, we'll get a cabin.
But okay.
Yeah, we did, like, in high school, I grew up in the Rio Grande Valley. Mm-hmm. So, you know, on weekends, we would go tent camp on the island, beach camp.
Yeah.
So a lot of this reminded me of that. You know, we would take drugs and drink and just be stupid.
Oh, so with your friends, not your family. Got it.
Yeah, no, we would tent camp like at Garner State Park and take summer vacations with the family, but no, like with friends and stuff.
Friends camping, yeah.
Yeah, we would go to South Padre Island quite a bit.
Okay.
You don't like camping.
I fucking hate camping. Yeah. I need four walls and my fucking Blu-ray player. I do not like camping.
Get a square tent.
Hmm?
Get a square tent. You get your four walls.
No.
Put some cardboard.
That's not, no. I want my fucking pillow top mattress. Yeah. No, I don't like camping. I don't understand.
What about as a kid? Did you camp much?
Not really. I think I can count on one hand the number of times I've actually been camping. Maybe, I don't even think I really went with my family. It wasn't really our thing. I had friends who got married up in the Sequoias once and like, oh yeah, wow. You're looking like that's pretty. And I'm like, no, it was fucking awful.
I do think the older you get, the more, well, at least for me personally, the more I'm like, oh, I'll spend money and I'll get a cabin.
Right.
And, I mean, tent camping doesn't sound that appealing to me. I guess it would depend on the environment. But as a kid, you're just completely immune and
sure,
you don't care about the elements and stuff.
Yeah, I can see that as a kid. I probably would have been a lot more tolerant about it, but it just wasn't something my family really did.
Right.
And I'm still to this day. And so I go into this movie, first time watching it, and I'm already not a camper, but then I'm watching these people and I'm like thinking logistically, I'm like, number one, how did you decide this is where you're going to go camp? Because it's literally in the middle of the fucking Death Valley with like your landmark is a tumbleweed 50 yards away.
Yeah.
And B, how did you guys all determine where you're going to meet? Like, did you, because this is pre-cell phone.
Right. There's no GPS. It's not like meet at the second. I mean, there's nothing. There's no landmarks.
Yeah. It's like turn off highway 138 and at the fourth tumbleweed, turn right and go straight for 50 miles or something like that. Like, I don't know how they even found this. This seems like the worst fucking place to camp. Cause when Bambi shows up, she's like, I have to pee. And I was like, yeah, where are you fucking going to the bathroom in this place?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I didn't see any setups. I mean, they did have tents. Maybe they dig a hole behind it, but I can tell you probably the main reasons that they selected this, and it's the opening scene where you can just get in the bed of your truck, put a toolbox on your accelerator on the car in your truck, start it and fuck in the bed.
Yeah.
Without hitting rocks or going anywhere.
Right. You're just straight flat. You're on a joyride, whatever you want to call it.
It'd be fun. I mean, I do think it'd be fun just to go. It'd be an experience, like completely nobody around, just this flat, barren, nothing's around except you and your friends.
Yeah.
That would be fun. Do like some hardcore like hallucinogens or something. Just
I've done drugs in the desert, and that's well and good.
Yeah.
I've been to Death Valley too, and it does look like this. And its appeal wears off very quickly. You're like, all right.
Right.
It's flat and hot.
Also, I think another reason they went is they seemed to like to tan. These people were very tan.
Yeah.
And, you know, they would take their shirts off and tan.
Bambi.
Bambi.
Is that it? Did I get it right?
Bambi's right. Is it Craig or Greg?
Greg.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, the tanning, like they're all very tan, which answers the question of after a day of walking around, why aren't they all sunburned to hell?
Yeah, that's me anywhere. I mean, I'm a fair complexion.
Immediately burned. And yeah. And that was one thing where I kind of thought about, like, you know, it'd be really cool is like after a day, if they had like some really cool, like sunburn effects on their face
blisters
or something,
and blisters
and like red. But I mean, they're all so tan. It's like,
yeah, okay, that's why I kept forgetting, like, is this in Australia? I mean, nobody has accents or anything, but the way they look and the landscape,
it feels like, yeah, it definitely feels very Australian. But getting back to the opening with like them in the backseat, it's so funny because when the car's going and they start going at it, you start seeing his butt like rise up and down, up and down, up and down above the bed of the truck.
Yeah.
You might need to stop it at some point.
The only way it stops in the movie is the toolbox just happens to fall off.
Yeah.
Danger.
Very. Not, they didn't think that one through all the way.
They're just living life, you know, to the fullest.
Yeah. I realized I did not give a summary of the film. So, I should probably do that now before we jump in.
Yeah.
So it does open with two very blonde, two very tan people in Death Valley having sex in the back of their pickup truck. They're on their way to go camping. They're meeting up with two of their other friends. That's Tripp and Mary. And then Greg's brother, Kyle, shows up with his, I don't want to call him girlfriend.
It's like a fake girl.
He just met some girl named Bambi.
He bought a bike and she came with the bike.
Yeah.
That's what the line was.
Yeah. So they show up at the camping site because Kyle got some letter for his brother. Greg apparently... or Kyle applied to a taco place on his behalf or something like
that. Like a taco school called Taco King or something.
Something like that. It's like McDonald's University, but for tacos or something like that.
You're going to be a taco tycoon.
So he drives all the way out there on his bike to give him this letter to tell Greg, you've been accepted into Taco Bell University or whatever, Taco King.
I mean, that was just he made that up.
He
right?
did, yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to figure that out right now.
But he really came out there because there's actually this love triangle. Chris, the main final girl, she and Kyle used to be together. Now she's with Kyle's brother, Greg. Kyle came out there to, I don't know, disrupt their vacation or try to get her back kind of thing. So he stays for a little while and then he takes Bambi back to her car. And she leaves, but we're getting more too far into the plot. That's the basic premise is we've got six kids in the desert. And then we've got a huge black pickup truck that is stalking and killing them.
Right.
And that's the movie. Yeah. So, but getting back to Kyle, after he shows up, Bambi, who you would think would be the first one to go, you know, no shaming, but she's an exhibitionist. She's not shy about like, I just met you, but I will gladly show you my tits multiple times.
Yeah.
Three times during a football game, I think.
Yeah. That football game was pretty long.
I timed it. It was over 4 minutes long. It was long. But he drives, Kyle gets Bambi on the bike and then they drive out for a while and he drops her off at a car and then she leaves. So she's out of the movie.
Yeah. Setup's really strange too, because when she gets there, she's playing very, you know, very airhead, you know, just like, oh my God, hey, oh yeah, let's go. But then when they get back to the car, they're both like, do you think they bought it? And she no longer had that voice.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess she was just in character
I think it was whole act. Yeah. And like, he just brought her out there to try to make Chris jealous. Doesn't work.
And I don't know if she's planted there for that time being to maybe... I don't know, to give the viewer the illusion that perhaps she could be the killer in the black truck. Because as soon as she leaves, that's when the black truck starts coming more. So
it's trying to make us think that Kyle is the killer for most of the time. Because when Kyle leaves on his bike, he doesn't come back to the campsite with everyone. And so they think Kyle is mad about Chris and Greg. And so now he's just messing with them. But then you also have Bambi who left. So technically it could be her.
Right.
What I do think it's missing, because it's literally the first 30 minutes, they do spend a lot of time like setting up who's who, the relationships. They spend 4 minutes on a fucking football game. So there's a lot of setup time. I think what could have added to it a little bit, at least for me, would have been there was supposed to be one other couple that was supposed to meet them there who never showed up. Okay. And we get to see that kill, but the others don't. And so they think, well, maybe it's those people, those could be another,
yeah,
or something like that.
That would work. Cause yeah, the first time you see the black truck is he picks up Greg's jeans when they're fucking in the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like your idea. That would have been cool to have like a, we see a kill of another couple that never shows up.
Right. And then like they're, yeah, then they eventually run into them. Cause you know, Chris does eventually discover like their bodies as they're trying to walk back. And so I would think that that would work. It could work its way in really well, where you just have one extra scene of two other people who are supposed to show up. And then a throwaway line later about, oh, Jim and Martha never showed up.
Yeah. I mean, I liked the hangout scenes. They did linger too long.
Oh, it's very, yeah.
I mean, there's the football scene and then just kind of sitting around the tents talking.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it does, it sets up the, you know, the friendship and like the relationship and the history they have together.
Yeah.
So it does set that up, and it kind of works like, again, in that kind of madman vibe. It's clearly presented like at this time and place to just like let loose, have fun. Mm-hmm. We're just going to fuck and play football and get tan.
Yeah.
So you're kind of, you know, you're not set up for what's going to happen. You know, you're kind of at ease with these guys.
Yeah.
So the kills are a little more effective in that regard. But again, once it starts, you're just waiting for the kills.
Yeah. And once they do start, it's, I think that's one of the other interesting things about this movie, is because I did call it a slasher.
Yeah.
And, sure, you know, slasher, you know, we're not going to nitpick. We're not going to get into a, you know, final girl argument about definitions or whatever. But there's a stalking and killing element to this. But his preferred weapons are, besides his truck, grenades and a shotgun.
Yes. That first time, because the grenade, that was like at the 30-minute mark.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's Greg and his...
Chris.
And Chris are in a truck.
Yeah.
And they're just... They still think it's his brother Kyle that's fucking with them in that truck. And then as they're driving, the truck goes by them. And they're like, what is that? It's a grenade! I was like, what? This is okay, that's when I knew this movie's totally going places,
right,
that I want it to. But yeah, and that's like the first appearance of a grenade. I think he uses it...
More time.
With Greg.
Yeah.
So he catches Greg, buries him with only his head above the ground, drives over him, you know, in his truck. When I say drives over him, just his wheels go, you know, over his head. And then he drops a grenade right there and blows half his face off.
Yeah.
And that's when you get really good effects happening too.
Yeah. Well, later on you get to see it. Like you just hear. So grenade goes off in the truck. Truck guy catches Greg, buries him, but Chris has ran off at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But she does hear the grenade go off. And so first time I watched this, I was like, man, I didn't get to fucking see it. But you do get to see it later.
Yeah.
So I did appreciate that at least. So
it looks great.
I mean,
it's like his bottom jaw is left, mm-hmm, and half his face is, it just looks really great.
It looks fantastic. All right. So it's like Lance said, spends about first 30 minutes or so of being a hangout movie. And then it gets to some grenade action. After that, Chris, she gets back to the camp and Trip tries to wake up Mary, but they find out that Mary, she's dead in the sleeping bag and has had her throat slit.
Yeah. Trip must have been
out.
Yeah. Cause it takes some, and what was really funny is they set it up really well is cause Chris comes back to camp. She's trying to wake up Trip and he's not getting up at all.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this dude must be like dreaming or physically or mentally into the astro plane.
Oh yeah. He's on another plane right now. Yeah.
I love the Trip character in his Grateful Dead shirt. He's talking about his third eye. There's a scene when they're hanging out. He said he talked to, you know, I guess some, I don't know, medium or somebody where in a past life, he was told he helped destroy Atlantis. I just love him. The cosmic law and astral plane. And then when he sees the black truck, or one of the quotes that I have here, it's whenever you die, if your soul still has karma to work off of, it comes back, you know, usually after 7 years, it's cosmic law. And then he sees this black truck and he starts thinking like, you know, we attracted him to us. There's got to be a reason he's here. He's very like spiritual and philosophical.
There's a reason for everything, kind of, but in, not in like the religious sense, in the spiritual sense.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's wearing his Grateful Dead shirt like all the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, when Chris comes to camp and tries to wake him up, he doesn't wake up. He's a very deep sleeper. So it's obvious that you can kill his girlfriend right next to him. Mm-hmm. Good scene.
Yeah. I did like when, so when he dies later too, I
couldn't. He dies twice technically.
That's true. So his dying words though.
Yeah.
I rewound it three times and all I could hear was astral plane. Like yeah. That's it.
I think he says, he's gurgling something and he says something I can't make out, but I think he does say at the end, I'll see you on the astral plane.
Okay. Yeah, I knew that was in there, but he doesn't know how to talk with fake blood in his mouth. And so it's all like garbled. And I'm just like, what are you saying? I must know your last words, Trip.
Yeah, Trip is such a good character. And before he dies in real life, because there's a dream sequence that Chris has where she thinks it's Kyle that's the killer in the black truck. And he kills Trip. But when he really dies, he does a great... He flips off the driver.
It's a good middle finger.
Good middle finger. You know, he's really into it, convicted, and he just does it with a passion.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just gets immediately run over after that and then shotgun to the face.
Yeah. But his fake death is great.
It's really good.
I knew it's got that sense to it where you kind of know it's a dream though, and I wish he didn't.
Yeah, there's that happens a lot in this movie, mm-hmm. and you can't really tell if it's dream or action because the dialogue is so slow.
Right.
Like I actually I turned it up to like, you know, point like at least 1.25 like speed because mm-hmm. it was too slow. It sounded like a dream. Like it sounded like it was in slow motion at times. And some of the slow motion scenes actually used are just really odd, but the dialogue especially felt like a dream. But yeah, that dream sequence especially. Yeah, Trip is chained to a tree. I guess it's
the one She's, tree and
it's a dream tree.
Yeah, I mean, it's a dream
it's tree. Not even there. That's how we should have known it was a dream. But he has his arm chained and one of his legs are chained and they're kind of wrapped around a tree.
Yeah.
And the chain is attached to the bumper of the truck. And then I think you know what happens.
Oh, yeah. He takes off and you don't get to see it actually happen, but you see the aftermath and you see those limbs.
Yeah.
Taken out of their joints. So you see like the top of the bone and like all the flesh and everything. And then Chris screams, she's hiding behind a bush watching all this. But again, it's in slow motion. To your point about like it being like slow, I feel like I don't know if it's purposeful because they were trying to create this sort of dreamlike illusion where it's like, you don't know what's reality versus not. And I'm like, yeah, mirages are like hazy, like vision wise. And I don't really feel like they played with that enough. Yeah. Like, I feel like this would have been a way for you to, they could have done that and they didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's what they were going for was like, this could be a mirage, but you're right. I don't think it was executed that way.
Yeah.
I think they also focused a little, like the title's great.
Yeah.
Mirage is a great title. And as you're watching it, if you keep remembering, oh, this is called Mirage. It is kind of effective, like with what you're watching and the dream quality and stuff. But I mean, we'll get to the end, but I feel like they played too much on the title in the end. And that's why I was just like, okay, dumb.
Yeah. If they would have just ended it before they got to that end, I would have been much happier with it. But yeah, we'll get to that too. But
yeah.
All right. So we went through pretty much all the kills of everybody. Chris, like we already mentioned, Greg's head getting blown off. Chris finds her acid wash jeans on top of his head later when she's escaping. They run on foot, her and Trip. One, after they find Mary's body, they take off on foot. They're walking through the desert. And here's another reason why I like Trip too, is because Chris is like, we gotta go, we gotta go. And he was like, he's in a fucking truck.
Yeah.
We're on foot. Like, it doesn't matter how fast we walk. He's going to catch us.
He's very like, you know, out of his mind and spacey, but he knows the environment he's in and he's realistic.
Oh, I like that about him.
I do like Chris though too, because she is very in charge, very pushy. Like, you know, let's go, put your shoes on. Come on, put your shoes on. You know, it's just, she's very survival instinct.
Yeah. She's got the good qualities of a final girl where she's like, she's not going to sit around and wait for anybody to like And she does, you know, she gets mad when he lets her sleep too long. She's like, no, we got to go. And he's like, the fuck does it matter? He's got a truck. We got our feet.
Yeah. Well, his reaction too, Tripp's reaction when they open up the sleeping bag and see his girlfriend, that's when he's like, he just starts crying and he's like, oh my God, we're all, you know, we're all going to die. We're dead. You know, it's just, it's so good.
Yeah.
I really like his character.
Yeah. He's the best, but the villain.
Oh yeah. That's
he tops it. Like it's almost as if the movie knows like, okay, we know we killed off the most interesting character. So let's give you another one now.
Yeah. So yeah, I think the whole premise is, you know, not really red herrings, but they are, you're trying to figure out who the actual killer is. Is it really Kyle? You know, was that dream real? Is it, could it be Bambi?
Mm-hmm.
No, it's just some random white guy just pops up like with 15 minutes left in the movie.
Yep. With no connection to any of these people whatsoever. No fucking reason. And I kind of like that.
Oh, I 100% appreciated it like that. Cause that's where you're like, okay, you're, just like you said, the character, all the most important or most interesting characters are dead.
Yeah.
Let's throw this random dork in here.
Yep.
Who's, you know, like I said, he reminded me of Topher Grace trying to be some sort of serial killing maniac.
Yeah. He's got all these lines, like his tone, like when he first shows up, he's like, what does he say? Like, I'm actually a really nice guy. And like, just when he's his line delivery and he's like, you know, how much pain do you think you can take before you die?
Yeah. Like, I hate to disappoint you, Chris, but these rocks are my home. But no, his first line, and it's, he says exactly what everybody who's watching the movie says.
Yeah.
Basically, because he kills Kyle.
Yeah.
Shoots Kyle with the shotgun, gets out. He has an arrow in his hand and he just jabs it in his throat. And that's when the camera pans up and you see his face and you're like, who the fuck is this? And Chris is, you know, behind a rock and she yells and he just slowly looks up and goes like, what? It's just perfect. I mean, I was laughing hard.
And, yeah.
Because it was exactly my reaction seeing this guy, like, who the hell is this guy?
Yeah.
But yeah, then Chris starts, he starts chasing Chris, just toying with her 100%.
Mm-hmm.
And she starts coming across all these dead bodies. At this point, they're in this rocky area.
And he tosses a corpse at her at one point, like a, it's like half decomposed.
Yeah,
like
all these rotting corpses that he had killed. And he's like introducing him. It's like, oh, that's Mr. Jordan. He was a school teacher from New York. You know, I never really liked school. It's like a garbage day type.
It is. Yeah, I have that note too. I was like, it's a, like that connection between Silent Night, Deadly Night too. And I was like, it's garbage day on the rocks in Death Valley.
Yeah, his dialogue is perfect. Then there's another body. He's all, this is Bill Rollins. He was Mr. Southern California 2 years in a row. Incredible biceps. I force fed him his large intestines. One tough son of a gun. It was too much.
Yeah.
And then he starts complaining about how she's so beautiful and how do beautiful people, do you just find another beautiful person to be in a couple with? You know, it makes me sick. And that's when you realize he's just some delirious killer who's just randomly killing people.
Yeah.
But he keeps asking her like, you know, tell me your story, which is obviously the way he's talking about Bill Rollins and Mr. Jordan or whatever, he likes to hear about them before, you know, he force feeds them their intestines.
Right. He's got their life stories. So like he wants to know more about them. And so, yeah, I he's fun.
He's very fun. Yeah. And his, and then we get obviously the final showdown between him and Chris.
Yeah.
And his deaths. I mean, the final battle is amazing.
Oh yeah.
It's like, really well done.
It really is. And so spoilers, if you know, you haven't watched it yet and we always spoil, but you want to probably skip maybe a few minutes cause we'll talk about that. Plus the stupid twist. But yeah, like he gives her the choice. She's picked up her bow and arrow, which she's been carrying this whole time.
Yeah.
And it's not like a hunting one. Like it's got a hunting arrow on it. With
he makes fun of the bow and arrow.
Because it's ridiculous. Yeah. Like, why would you bring that? Like, you're going to practice archery out in the middle of the desert. Like, it's just the most random thing. And I think she shoots once and misses. He gives her another chance and she gets him. I think he's like yelling at her and she shoots him straight through the mouth and it goes through the back of his head.
Yeah.
And he's still like conscious and alive, and
he collapses, and you're like, okay, fuck yeah. And then she jumps into the truck. There's no keys. And as she's like looking around, you know, he does like a Michael Myers sit up.
Real quick. Yeah. Yeah.
And then you're like, oh shit, he's still alive, which I guess that wouldn't kill you. It's just right here and, you know, straight through the back of your.
I mean, I guess if it didn't get your spinal cord, sure.
Yeah, that's true. Like you wouldn't be able to move.
You'd have to be like the exact right angle.
But yeah, but he has the know-how to like turn around, just unscrew the head of the arrow and then just pulls the arrow straight out without, you know, without ripping out like the back of his throat. And then she has a shotgun in the truck.
Right.
Shoots him in the chest. Oh no, before that, he dangles the keys.
That's right.
And he swallows the keys and he eats the keys, the truck keys. So she shoots him with the shotgun, gets a knife, which he had, and guts him to get the keys out.
And he wakes up again while she's gutting him. Yeah. That guy does not, he is Michael Myers. He will not fucking stay down.
Yeah.
She shot him 6 times.
But yeah, and the gunshot effects are terrible in this movie. I don't know if you heard that, but they're just like,
pew! Yeah, they're not good. Yeah. Like that's not, I don't know guns very well, but I know that's not how shotguns sound, but that's fine. I forgive the movie. They had no budget, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the least of.
Yeah. But yeah, so she finally gets the key out. It should have just ended there.
I agree.
But it doesn't show her like get in the car and drive away or anything. It immediately cuts to her being questioned by the police and telling her story. And this is where they are playing a little bit with the title of the movie again, because the police detective is telling her, we didn't find any of this stuff that you're talking about. We didn't find this guy and these bodies or your friends or anything. Like maybe your friends are just playing a joke on you. And so now she's questioning like, what's happening? Did this all happen? Did I do it? You know?
Yeah. Did he say all your friends were at the campsite or no friends were at the campsite?
I heard that they weren't there, that they were gone, but the copy is really bad. So I could have misheard it.
That's why I kind of reminded, like at first I thought he said, we found all your friends, but they were dead at the campsite and the Jeep worked, you know, almost implying like she killed
them. The Jeep worked, yes.
But there was no black truck. There were no decayed bodies.
Yeah.
You know, basically, like, you know, that was the first time I watched it, I had heard that all your friends were there. They're fine. But then the second time I watched it, I could have sworn he said that they were dead at the campsite, but I couldn't. The quality was bad. I kept rewinding. I couldn't figure it out. But yeah, basically, it's set up to everything she's telling the cop is fake. It's a mirage.
Yeah. It's like, oh, really, movie?
Yeah. And I kind of wish that if it did end like that, I wish it, you know, it had her confused, like, but he couldn't have got away, you know, or whatever she whispers. And then it cuts again. Let's just keep this fucking ending going.
Just go. Yeah.
It cuts again to her friends popping out. They're like, ah, gotcha, Chris. Let's go camping. And then they all load up in a car and drive off. And right behind them is the black truck.
That's a better ending. I like your ending.
And then like minute play.
There you go. I like it.
But yeah, I loved the ending, but I hated it because that final battle between the killer and stuff was perfect.
Yeah.
But yeah, then you get to the whole literal mirage, whatever.
Yeah. It's like, maybe you've just played with your environment a little bit more versus trying to make a literal ending like that. So, I mean, outside the ending, I like this movie a lot. I think it's, you know, definitely got its flaws, but so many movies like this do. I don't want to, you know, pick it apart. I want to just appreciate it for the good stuff that it has. It's got a unique setting. It's got weird choice of weapons. It's got weird characters and memorable characters.
Yeah.
Great gore, silly ending, but I think it's, you know, it's still like a 3-star movie to me. It's not fantastic, but I'd still definitely recommend it because of its unique qualities, its unique setting, things like that. And I do think this is something that one of those boutique labels is going to get their hands on if they can and restore. I hope they restore it so I can actually hear what people are fucking saying.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this is a movie I'll definitely watch again. You know, if I didn't have anything or anything in mind to put on, I would throw this on because it is fun and the characters are just, once you get to the killer, it's so much. I mean, even before then it's fun, but if you've seen it before, you know, the killer's coming, it makes it worth like a rewatch. So
yeah, trip is fun.
Totally recommend it.
What about a double feature?
Okay, so mine might be a little predictable, but I'm going with Robert Harmon's The Hitcher from 1986.
Nice, yeah.
This is probably my favorite Rutger Hauer performance.
Ooh.
I mean, you know, everybody knows him. He's Roy, the replicant, Roy Batty. Mm-hmm. I mean, but I love him in this. I love how evil and kind of just chill he is in all his actions.
Yeah.
And that kind of reminded me of the killer in here. We have killers who don't really have a clear motive. They seem to just be killing at random.
Yeah.
And what's more is they kind of toy with their victims, you know, in The Hitcher, that's all Hauer does. Or I guess I could call him Ryder. His name's Ryder in Hitcher.
Yeah.
But with their final victim, especially, they just kind of toy with him. And then there's that similar scene in the movie, although it's a dream sequence for Tripp, where he's chained up, which we explained, and his limbs are ripped off.
Right.
In The Hitcher, Rutger Hauer's character, Ryder, ties up a victim between two semi-trucks.
Yep.
And spoiler, or it doesn't show anything, but it essentially does the same thing. So it's good stuff all around. Yeah, I love The Hitcher. I've always loved it. I would start that off with a double feature and just end it with the goofy ending in Mirage. What about you?
Nice. I had a hard time picking for this one because I was like, well, you could do a desert horror and you could do Hills Have Eyes. And then I started kind of thinking in terms, there's another movie called Death Valley from 1982 that's got Ralphie from A Christmas Story in it.
Oh, okay.
It's not very good. And then I was thinking like, there's more obvious ones like Duel, which a lot of the,
I was thinking of
a lot of references to that movie in the reviews for this, which totally makes sense. Like I absolutely get that. But then I was like, okay, I'm going to go for a more like, Killer on Wheels, direction. And so initially I was thinking Death Proof, mm-hmm. which I thought would be fun, but I couldn't sell myself on a Death Proof Mirage double feature. So instead, I went a completely different direction for Killer on Wheels, and I'm going to go with Rubber 2010.
Okay.
Which is directed by Quentin Dupieux. It's about a group of people who are gathered in the California desert to watch a quote-unquote film about a sentient homicidal car tire. I'm sure most people are familiar with it. You've probably just seen like a trailer clip or something of just a fucking tire running or rolling down the highway, and it like starts shaking and telepathically makes people and bunnies and birds and other things explode. So I don't know. I just, something about like that absurd, dumb little movie with this.
That sounds amazing. I've never seen Rubber.
It's super fun. I think I watched it on Hoopla. So if you have like a library card, you can check the movie out.
I don't, but.
Honey, not a library. We live down the street from a library.
I know. It's bad.
All right. Where's yours available to watch? Just Blu-ray?
Hitcher? The Hitcher would be a Blu-ray release.
Okay.
Where you can find it.
I mean, if you don't own it, you should, because it's a great movie.
Yeah, 100%.
Mirage on YouTube. Remember, do the one that's got more views. The next episode is Lance's pick, and then after that, we are going to have an end-of-the-year episode where we're going to talk about our top five new to me movies that we watched this year. We'll talk a little bit about like our Letterboxd stats, who are our most watched directors and actors, and
that'll be fun.
All that kind of stuff. We're going to have some guests for that. We're going to have Anthony from the Cult Movies Pod and Lindsay from Schlock and R are going to join us for that.
Yes.
They've been gracious enough to have us on their podcast. So we definitely wanted to find a chance to have them on with us. So we'll all be sharing our favorite discoveries, or whatever people call them, new to me movies of 2021. We're not going to be doing best of 2021 because, frankly, I don't really watch new movies. Well, I did a lot this year because of Fantastic Fest.
Yeah.
But normally my pie chart for like new watches is like this tiny little sliver.
Yes.
So new to me movies. And we're not going to just do horror. We'll, go outside like we do for June's Boitation. So that'll be coming up towards the end of the month. But before that, Lance, next pick.
Next pick. So we're going to get a little uncomfortable here.
I like it.
Hopefully. So we're smack dab in the holiday season, and I know it's a time like to be kind to one another.
Fuck that.
You know, reflect on things. My next pick is something to remind you how fucked up the world and people are. So I'm picking Confessions of a Serial Killer.
Okay.
1985. It's directed by Mark Blair. It's currently on YouTube. And it's loosely based on the real life serial killer, Henry Lee Lucas.
Oh, okay.
Have you seen this one?
I haven't. No, I didn't think that there was any reason to watch anything but Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer.
Right. And that's what, so we all know Michael Rooker plays Henry in Portrait of a Serial Killer. This one came out, or this one was made a year before that.
Oh.
So it even predates it. And a guy named Robert A. Burns plays the Henry part, but his name in it is Daniel Ray Hawkins. And basically it's him just going over and confessing the supposedly hundreds of murders that he did in real life.
Okay.
Very disturbing to watch. It's very, it has a very realistic and kind of lingers a little long on some scenes. That's why I think it's a perfect movie for the holidays. Watch it with your family so you can appreciate, just, you know, life, and then just listen to our episode as we dissect it. So consider this a present from us, Unsung Horrors, to you. It currently has 285 views on Letterboxd. And like I said before, it's on YouTube. Confessions of a Serial Killer.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's good.
You're not serious about watching it with your family, though, right? I mean, depending on your family.
I mean, yeah, I'm serious.
Okay.
Especially if you have kids like under 12.
Okay. That sounds like you're...
They should appreciate this well-made movie and, you know, the lighting that's used, the dialogue. It's good. It'll teach them some lessons.
All right. That's good. All right. If you're not already, you can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Slasher, all at Unsung Horrors. You can follow me on Letterboxd, Instagram, and Twitter at Hex Massacre.
And I'm on Letterboxd, Instagram, and Twitter at L Scheibe.
We'll see you back in 2 weeks for Portrait of a Serial Killer. Confessions?
Confessions.
God, I'm going to get that wrong next episode. Like, I'm going to keep saying Portrait, so.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering, if like Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer was already named, you know, after this came, or I don't know.
We'll find out.
Hopefully we will.
All right. Yeah, hopefully there's more on it than Mirage has out there in the world.
The cranes made it.
Thanks everyone for listening, y'all. Night.
Bye.
And apple wine. We'll hit the road again at 9:10. Me and this girl, and she's so foxy, and we're headed to San Bernardino.
Hey, it's Death by Video.
I'm Phil.
I'm Kit.
And I'm Graham, saying welcome to our podcast full of merry movie mayhem.
Ever wonder what an Irish kung fu movie would look like?
It's called Fatal Deviation, and we covered it.
Ever wonder what a movie about a thousand cats would look like?
It's called Night of a Thousand Cats, and we covered it.
And it stars Hugo Stiglitz. Listen to Death by Video to hear us discuss and dissect some of the weirdest, wildest, and wackiest films ever made. All this and more on Death by Video!
Woo!